On the 1st of September, Stalin dispatched the Politburo around the countryside to check the harvest. Kirov was sent to Kazakhstan, where there was a strange incident which might have been an assassination attempt or meant to resemble one. When he returned to Leningrad, four more Chekists were added to his NKVD guard. This made Kirov one of the most guarded of all the Soviet leaders, and he did not like it. Sensing it was another attempt to separate him from his trusted local Chekists, particularly his bodyguard, Borisov. In early November, Kirov drove out with Stalin and his son Vasily to Zubalova to watch a puppet show put on by Svetlana, and then play billiards. Khrushchev, now a rising Tsar, witnessed an exchange of sharp words between Stalin and Kirov. Khrushchev was shocked that the Vosht behaved disrespectfully to another party member. Svadnitsa noticed Stalin was in a bad mood. Kirov anxiously returned to Leningrad. He longed to discuss the rising tension with his friends. "I haven't seen Sergo in such a long time." On the 25th of November, Kirov rushed back to Moscow for the plenum, hoping to consult with Arjanikidze. Sergo did not make it to the plenum. Earlier that month, visiting Baku with Beria, he was suddenly taken ill after dinner. Beria took Sergo back to Tiflis by train. After the 7th of November parade, Sergo fell ill again with intestinal bleeding, then suffered a serious heart attack. Three specialists were confounded by his mysterious symptoms. Sergo was nonetheless determined to return for the plenum, but Stalin formally ordered him to strictly fulfill doctor's instructions and not return to Moscow before the 26th of November. "Don't take your illness lightly. Regards, Stalin." When Beria was involved, it was indeed foolish to take one's illnesses lightly. Stalin perhaps did not want Sergo and Kirov to meet at the plenum. Beria, who had offered to use his axe for Stalin, was already aware of the leader's disillusionment with Sergo. He was to prove adept with poisons. After the plenum, Stalin personally escorted Kirov to the Red Arrow train, embracing him in his compartment. Kirov was back at work in Leningrad the next day. On the 1st of December, he started work at home, preparing a speech. Then, wearing his worker's peaked cap and raincoat, he set off on foot for his office. He went through the public entrance and walked up to his third floor. His bodyguard, Borisov, fell behind, either through unfitness or being strangely delayed by some Chekists from Moscow who appeared at the door. Kirov turned right out of the stairwell and passed a dark-haired young man named Leonid Nikolaev. Nikolaev pulled out a Nagan revolver and shot Kirov from 3 feet away in the back of the neck. The bullet passed through his cap. Nikolaev turned the pistol on himself and squeezed the trigger, but an electrician working nearby somehow knocked him down, and the second bullet hit the ceiling. Borisov, the guard, staggered up breathlessly, gun drawn impotently. Kirov fell face down, head turned to the right, his cap's peak resting on the floor, still gripping his briefcase. A Bolshevik workaholic to the last. When the terrible news arrived from Leningrad, Kaganovich noticed that Stalin was shocked at first. Then, showing no emotion, he ordered Yanukidze, as secretary of the Central Executive Committee, to sign an emergency law that decreed the trial of accused terrorists within 10 days, and immediate execution without appeal. Stalin must have drafted it himself. This 1st of December law laid the foundation for a random terror without even the pretense of a rule of law. Within 3 years, 2 million people had been sentenced to death or labor camps in its name. There was no discussion and no objections. As easily as slipping the safety catch on their Mausers, the Politburo clicked into the military emergency mentality of the Civil War. Stalin immediately decided that he would personally lead a delegation to Leningrad to investigate the murder. He played his role with self-conscious and pre-planned thespianism. When he dismounted from the train, Stalin strode up to Medvyed, the Leningrad NKVD chief, and slapped his face with his gloved hand. Stalin immediately headed across the town to the hospital to inspect the body, then set up a headquarters in Kirov's office, where he began his own strange investigation, ignoring any evidence that did not point to a terrorist plot by Zinoviev and the left opposition. Poor Medvyed was interrogated first, and criticized for not preventing the murder. Then the small and shabby murderer himself, Nikolaev, was dragged in. This frail dwarf of 30 had been expelled from and reinstated in the party, but had written to Kirov and Stalin complaining of his plight. Falling to his knees before the jackbooted leader, he sobbed, "What have I done? What have I done?" Khrushchev, who was not present, claimed that Nikolaev kneeled and said he had done it on assignment from the party. A source close to Voroshilov has Nikolaev stammering, "But you yourself told me." "Take him away," ordered Stalin. Then the assassin's wife, Milda Draul, was brought in. The NKVD spread the story that Nikolaev's action was a crime passionnel following an affair with Kirov. Draul was a plain-looking woman, and those who knew both believed they were an unlikely couple. Draul claimed she knew nothing. "To me, it's already clear that a well-organized counter-revolutionary terrorist organization is active in Leningrad," said Stalin. "A painstaking investigation must be made." There was no real attempt to analyze the murder forensically. Stalin certainly did not wish to find out whether the NKVD had encouraged Nikolaev to kill Kirov. It is said that Stalin later visited Nikolaev in his cell and spent an hour with him alone, offering him his life in return for testifying against Zinoviev at a trial. Afterwards, Nikolaev wondered if he would be double-crossed. The murkiness now thickens into a deliberately blind fog. Kirov's bodyguard, Borisov, was summoned. He alone could reveal whether he was delayed at the entrance and what he knew of the NKVD's machinations. As he was being fetched, in the back of an NKVD Black Crow, the vehicle swerved and grazed its side against the building. Somehow, in this dubious car crash, Borisov was killed. Did Stalin order Kirov's assassination? The mystery will never now be conclusively solved. There is no evidence that he did, yet the whiff of his complicity still hangs in the air. There is no written evidence, but we know that, in other murders, Stalin gave verbal orders in the name of the Instancia, an almost magical euphemism for the highest authority. Whether or not he killed Kirov, Stalin certainly exploited the murder to destroy not only his opponents, but also the less radical amongst his own allies.